Rumble.
I did not see that coming. I just thought I'd steal your, and we're back.
Yeah, that is my thing. But I saw you getting ready to gear up to say something. So I was like, I got to change it. I was like, I have to come up with something on the motherfucking fly that's going to hit. And it did. I think it hit because I can see the volume bars in mine are like, whoa.
Whoa.
Wow. Whoa, man.
Pulling shit out of your hat. I love it.
Or out of my ass. Either way.
Either way.
I'm literally shit out of my ass.
Okay, well, that's not a conversation for a podcast. At least not this one.
Not this kind of podcast. How you doing today, Mom? Oh, by the way, I'm Daphne.
I'm Gail.
That's my mom.
That's my kid.
Yep. How are you?
I'm good.
Cool.
Me Sorry. Too. I don't know what else to say.
Cool. Just, I'm doing good too.
It's a Monday, so it's one of those Mondays.
Yeah, it's Monday. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I did laundry.
Okay. I worked.
Thought I'd share my laundry tales.
Okay.
All right. You ready for my disturbing fact?
I'm so ready.
This is so gross.
Cool. Cool.
Have you heard of maggot therapy?
Yes, I have.
It's so gross. And there we go, being in sync once again. Okay, so maggot therapy is a type of biotherapy involving the introduction of live, disinfected maggots into non-healing skin and soft tissue wounds of a human or other animals for the purposes of cleaning out the necrotic tissue. Did I say that right?
Yep, necrotic. That means dead.
Okay, that's gross, but I guess that makes sense. Necromancy, necrophiliac.
I like your reference points.
You know, this is a true crime podcast and other spooky shit. Yeah, it's pretty fucking gross. It's meant to, like, disinfect a wound, which I don't understand when there's maggots in there.
Well, because they eat away the dead tissue, and the maggots are sterilized somehow, apparently, according to that. Is this a current therapy?
This is a current therapy.
Where do they do it?
Well, it's FDA approved, which that's okay. Weird to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a medical maggots is trademarked and is a prescription only medical device that's approved by the FDA. And they keep maggots for this kind of thing at hospitals too. To help people like that, which I don't understand. Like, how do you just have like maggot hatchlings laying around? There's so many things I looked up in relation to this. It can cause pain the first couple of days it happens to people. Ugh. Because they can feel the biting and picking at their skin.
Gross.
Yeah. And so sometimes they'll give people like pain relievers for it while it's happening. And in the first 2 days, it also causes an odor.
I'll bet it does.
This sounds so gross.
I like how you call it medical maggot therapy.
That's the trademarked name.
Okay. TM.
Yeah. Yeah, trademarked. So I looked up this too, what happened to the maggots after therapy.
Cool, because I was sitting on the edge of my seat wondering, those poor maggots, do they get to turn into flies?
Yes, they do. Within three.
Yes, they do.
Within when they're satiated, within 3 to 7 days, the maggots are able to leave the host. So I guess depending on how long it takes for the therapy, they may have to like replace the maggots.
Gross. Bring in a new round of maggots.
But then they're taken to some protected place where then they become flies. In 1 to 3 weeks.
I hate flies.
I do too. They're fucking disgusting.
Flies should not be protected.
And it's fly season right now.
Yeah, it's gross. It's either cold or fly season, which is sucks.
Yeah, it's so nasty.
Mm-hmm.
So it says that it's folk medicine that's used in many parts of the world. It's particularly helpful with chronic osteomyelitis.
Osteomyelitis?
Yeah. Osteomyelitis.
Sure.
Brain fart for chronic ulcers and other pus-producing infections.
And they're talking skin ulcers, not stomach ulcers.
Yes.
Yeah. Because if you swallowed maggots, it would digest in your stomach.
And then you'd have little flies crawling out.
Ew, no, because it would digest.
But no, they would just go crawling out.
Okay.
Be like, Keep hey, show. Fly.
Ew.
Like in that movie, The Possession. And she has all of those, moths coming up.
Ugh.
Which makes me sad because I actually really like moths. I don't like them, like, in my space. But I like looking at them. I think they're really pretty. And they're pollinators.
They are pollinators.
And these ones that are in the mountains near us, they look like birds. They're huge.
Yeah, we do have some really big, pretty moths.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Yep, and they have those weird beak things.
Yeah, I know. They're so cool. They are cool. I dig them, actually.
Me too.
Okay, so Mama, what you got going for me today? What do you have happening?
What do I have happening?
Yeah, what's popping?
My story today is brought to you by... No, just kidding.
Brought to you by tragedy.
Brought to you, exactly. All right, so this is the Easter Sunday Massacre. I don't know if you've heard of this before. On Sunday, March 30th. Oh, wait, I should give background.
Give it.
How I got this story, I never heard of it either. But my friend Peg that I hike with and play racquetball with, her sister was in town and we were hiking, and aka doing the stairs at Red Rocks, which we do some hiking around there too, but I guess it's
not technically. Well, I've heard this story. I like this story.
Yeah. So anyway, so her sister was telling me that, because we started talking about the podcast, and her sister was telling me that she's a thrifter and she has a store on eBay. And so she goes to thrift stores and finds cool stuff, and then she sells it out of her eBay store. So she got this painting that she thought was really cool. And she said, literally, like, she goes in, she sees it, and she's like, it was almost like she had, like, oh my God, I'm going to grab this and leave right now because it's so cool and I don't want anybody else to get it. And she's like, it was like, I tucked it under my coat and went up to the register. She was really cute telling the story. And so she said there was nothing. It was a painting or a photograph. I can't remember. Okay, my bad on that. But there was
painting.
No artist signature. There was no reference point. No nothing. Like, there wasn't any identifying markers on this painting of this house. It was just a house. And so she looked it up. And what she found out about it was where this Sunday, Easter Sunday massacre happened. And so she took the picture and she shredded it and threw it in the trash because she thought it was like bad mojo and she didn't want to have it and she didn't want anybody else to have it.
Yeah, because there are some of those weirdos out there that'll be like, oh, let me have one of Charles Manson's piece of toilet paper he used while he was in prison.
Ooh, gross.
Well, I just feel like I had to stick on the gross theme for the night. No, okay. I've already been there, done that, so yeah. We're staying with it.
Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, like the people who are like, they buy like Jeffrey Dahmer's lamps that were in his apartment.
Yeah, exactly.
Weird.
Well, people have that morbid curiosity, morbid fascination, whatever, however you want to call it, look at it. So then she looked it up, she found the story, and she kind of just gave me like a little snippet of the story. And I was like, oh, that sounds like I should do that for my podcast because no one to research it. So here we go. I did.
Here
I
we
researched
are.
It, and here we are. Sunday, March 30th, 1975, James Rupert was responsible for the deadliest family massacre in American history. He was 41 years old at the time of the murders, which occurred in his mother's house at 635 Minor Avenue in Hamilton, Ohio.
That sucks to be that family.
Yep. So I start with a bang, yeah?
That's sad.
It's
the deadliest family massacre. I'm sure some copycats out there trying to stage it to go down in history as an even bigger one.
Maybe. But this one's like, it's crazy. Anyway, and it was 1975. So if somebody wanted to do it, they would have done it by now.
That's true.
Yeah.
Almost 50 years later.
James Urban Rupert was born March 29th, 1934. He was the second child of Leonard and Charity Rupert. His mother had straight up told him when he was growing up that she wanted her second child to be a girl, but she didn't want a boy.
That's really sad.
Yeah,
that's like, yeah, sorry, you're not exactly what I wanted. Can I put a bow on you?
Well, and this is where you do that thing where you feel bad for the kid, but then the adult turns out to be a piece of shit. You don't feel bad about that. And a lot of people have bad shit happen in their lives and they don't turn into mass murderers.
No, that's very fair.
Right?
I don't disagree on that front. Yeah, I mean, we could all feel sorry for the troubled children of the cases that we talk about, but it's up to each individual to make their own way and do right or wrong in the world. And
Exactly.
It's like, yeah, I'm sorry you had a shitty upbringing, but you just made the world a terrible place.
Right. So his dad had a violent temper and was not really into like loving or praising his sons. So he was also not a stellar parent, right?
Yeah.
When James was a young boy, the Ruperts lived in a long barn-like structure, which lacked indoor plumbing and running water. His father raised chickens and squabs in the rear of the house. At the same time in his life, James began to suffer from a case of asthma, an allergy to dust and feathers, which left him sickly and limited many of his physical activities for the rest of his childhood.
What are squabs?
They're like, it's like a little bird.
Okay.
Like an eating bird. People eat them. Like squab, quail.
Is that like a Cornish game hen?
Something like that. I think they're smaller, but something along those lines.
Okay, gotcha.
So because he had the asthma and he was sick as a child, he couldn't, you know, do stuff that other kids do his age. And he walked hunched over from the illness because he was so sickly. And he couldn't even participate in gym class at school or play sports with the neighborhood kids or anything.
Did they know that he had asthma?
Yeah, they were just douchey, you know, kids.
No. Did the family know that they had asthma?
Yeah, he was diagnosed with asthma. They just didn't care.
That's so sad.
Yeah, it gets better.
Because, yeah, I mean, obviously he's living in an environment where there's going to be lots of dust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because can you imagine you don't have indoor plumbing or electricity or anything, and you're raising birds inside of your house?
Yeah, they're living in the old school version of a barn-do.
Yeah, a barn-do. So even without the asthma, his frail appearance and short stature could have severely limited his success in sports, playing with the neighborhood kids, all that kind of stuff. He's kind of set up for failure.
Yeah, I'd say so. It sounds like he may be... doesn't have the best chances at this point.
Right. So he was regarded by everyone as a sissy. All the kids in the neighborhood told him he was a sissy. He talked about himself as being a shy, introverted child who from his earliest years in school was always teased and had few, if any, friends.
That's really sad.
It is really sad.
See, that's what I'm saying is like, I feel really bad for this kid right now. But I just know that something bad is obviously going to go down since you said it in the first 30 seconds of introducing this.
Open with a bang.
Yeah, right? Pew, pew.
So until his junior year in high school, he remained pretty much a loner and he avoided extracurricular activities. He didn't go to like the school football games, baseball games. He didn't go to dances.
Well, that shit's overrated anyway. But yeah, at this point, it's like the late 40s, early 50s. That I guess that's kind of like the thing to do.
Yeah.
At this point, I think it's lame, but...
He never dated anybody when he was in high school, when he was younger. And the events of his childhood obviously had a lasting effect on him, hence the person he turned out to be. As much as he wanted to, he ended up being impotent, and he never in his entire life had sexual relations with a woman, except for the ones that, like, he fantasized about.
What does impotent mean?
He can't get it up.
Oh, is that why they call the dwarf the imp?
No.
In Game of Thrones?
No.
So I was like, he's always with prostitutes.
No, there's another reason, and I don't know what that is. So.
Okay, just wondering. By the way, I did start it, and I enjoyed it for anyone wondering, listening to Samuel Little Part 3.
You are enjoying it, not you did. You didn't binge watch all of the seasons.
Oh, no, I definitely. I'm only on episode 4. I really like it.
But so far, so good.
So far, so good.
When Leonard Sr. died at the age of either 36 or 37, different sources said different things. In 1947, Leonard Jr., James's older brother, was 14 and James was 12. Leonard took on the role of the man of the house, picking up right where their dad left off.
That's sad.
Teasing and relentlessly picking on James, telling him he was a weakling. Later in life, James told psychiatrists that his father told him he would never amount to anything and he would never be able to hold a job or support himself or anything like that. And he also claimed that after his father's death, he was taunted and beaten by his mother, who told his brother to do the same thing.
Jeez, yeah. Sounds like a really good home life situation. Which again, you feel sorry for these situations, right? But at this point, I mean, I don't know. I guess everybody handles their own shit differently. It sounds like he wanted to kill his family.
Right.
So. I would say some people might just never speak to them again.
Right. Or something else, I guess, like this guy.
Yeah.
And James also remembered his brother locking him in closets, tying him up with rope, beating him with a hose, and sitting on his head until he cried.
That's really sad.
Yeah, it's fucked up. So when James was 16 years old, he ran away from home on one occasion, and obviously he had to return home. He attempted to kill himself also by hanging himself with a sheet, and his suicidal thoughts stayed with him for most of his life.
That's really sad.
So he's depressed.
Yeah, sounds like.
Yeah.
It sounds like that's the perfect fucking storm to give you depression. You know, your whole family hates you and teases you and picks on you, and everybody else in your life does too, all of your schoolmates, and you are living in a dusty, dirty environment while you have this ailment that literally suggests no dirt or dust around you or in the air. It's probably best for you.
Yeah, it's all bad for this kid, but the grown-up could have made a different choice. And that's the last time I'll say that. So James went to college, but he never finished. His brother Leonard, the quote-unquote golden boy, finished college with an engineering degree and went to work for General Electric. He also went on to marry Alma, who was James's ex-girlfriend.
Nice.
One of the only girlfriends that he ever had.
That's kind.
Right?
Fuck. So who took over the family business then?
There was no... the chickens and stuff? I think they just moved into like a regular house. Because where this happened was not like a farmhouse. It was like a house.
It wasn't a barn dough.
It was a real house with like...
Indoor plumbing,
yeah. Exactly. And his mother was frustrated with James for not being able to hold down a job and drinking every night. And James owed both his mother and brother money that he'd borrowed from them after losing everything he had in the stock market crash of 1973 to 1974, which he didn't have much to begin with.
So he was living at home at this point.
He's living at home. Yeah, he's one of those.
He's not having a job.
He doesn't have a job, and he's living at home.
I feel like we just jumped a really big amount of time.
Sorry.
We went from like the
high school.
Yeah, high school, didn't finish college, to the 70s. And that's like the 50s.
Well, I don't really have anything in between.
Okay.
Like, apparently it's very unremarkable in between. But I have more later, but it's only after things happen that the later things come out.
Right.
And I can't tell you them first because then I'm telling things that I shouldn't be telling. So anyway, yes, there is a big gap in time in my research and also clearly in my story. So
I was like, wait, what?
What happened?
So yes, he's still living
at home. So he's living at home. Yeah, he doesn't have a job. He starts drinking. So anyway, he began drinking more and more, and he developed a liking for guns. He spent almost every night at a bar called the 19th Hole Cocktail Lounge. And James also started becoming paranoid, and he believed that his brother was tampering with his car on several different occasions. He also believed that the FBI had their phone tapped, and in collusion with his mother and brother were trying to convince James himself and other people that he was a homosexual. And he believed that his mother was actively trying to turn him into a homosexual. So he's kind of paranoid, delusional, yeah?
I was going to say, like, how does any of this make any sense? Like, what about him before what he did was remarkable enough for the FBI to be like,
exactly,
what's going on with this guy?
Why is he homosexual?
Right.
Yeah. So his paranoia really escalated in 1965 when the Hamilton Police Department determined that James had made an obscene phone call to an employee of the local public library where James spent a lot of his free time. Although he admitted to making the call, James was convinced that his mother and brother were attempting to discredit him by informing everyone of his transgression and then reporting to the FBI that he was a communist and a homosexual.
Okay.
So he's like, he's crazy. He's delusional
as fuck. Right. Sounds like he's seeing shit too.
So as I said before, he believed that the FBI was tapping his telephone, but not only his phone at home, but phones in restaurants and bars that he happened to just go to. So like apparently they knew ahead of time where he was going to go before he even knew, and they went and tapped the phone. So,
oh my God, this guy needs some help.
But he didn't get it. So over the years, he felt the intrusion of the FBI into his personal life continue to grow. And other groups were also implicated by Rupert in a plot to sabotage his career, his social contacts, and his car. And by 1975, he told psychiatrists of being followed by the State Highway Patrol and private detectives in the Sheriff's Department and the Hamilton Police.
It must be so lonely to live in your own world like this. Like, where shit's just going around.
Yeah.
And you're scared constantly because this sounds schizophrenic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was just diagnosed as delusional, and it's not pre-schizophrenia because, you know, they had schizophrenic diagnosis, obviously, in the 70s, but he was just delusional. Like, okay. He kind of, I think what happened is that he just got treated so shitty as a kid that he started to, like, live in a fantasy world. And then the more life shit on him, the more his fantasies also started shitting on him. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then he's drinking on top of it. So it's just adding to it, you know?
That's really sad.
It is really sad. But again.
No, but that's just sad. I can still feel sorry for him.
You can. The kid.
I can still feel sorry for the man as well. Just.
I guess you can.
Yeah. Just makes me sad. I feel like he was really alone and that's sad.
Mm-hmm.
Which there could have been so many different things that could have happened for none of this to have happened.
So on March 29th, 1975, he spent his 41st birthday target practice shooting cans on the banks of the Great Miami River that runs through Hamilton. He spent that evening at a local bar called the 19th Hole Cocktail Lounge. As I said, that's where he spent a lot of his time. He was there almost every night. He spent the night talking with a bartender, 28-year-old Wanda Bishop. He was complaining that his mother wanted him to move out and also pay her the money that he owed her. And at this time, James was an unemployed draftsman, and he was upset about his pending eviction by his mom, obviously, because he doesn't have a job, and then where's he going
to
go?
Right, he's got nowhere else to go.
Right. So he said his mother told him, if you can afford to buy beer 7 nights a week, you can afford to pay rent, which is a fair point.
I was going
to
say, I feel like that's fair.
Yeah, that's a fair point. But
clearly she's putting up with a lot of shit by still letting him live there.
Yeah, but she doesn't sound like a great person either.
No, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying, like, clearly she's putting up with a lot of shit.
Yeah, but to be fair, she created it.
She did, absolutely.
You know?
If she really was beating him and doing all that.
Right, because you reap what you sow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he told Wanda that he, quote, needed to solve the problem. James left the bar about 11 o'clock that night and then returned later and stayed at the bar until they closed at 2:30. When he came back, Wanda asked him if he'd solved the problem, and he said, no, not yet. Also, about a month before the massacre, he inquired about getting silencers for his guns while he was purchasing ammo. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
So no red flags or alarm bells went off in these people's brains?
Nope. Nope. Yeah. Well, and we'll get into that later, too. On Easter Sunday, March 30th, 1975, so that's the day after his birthday, right? After his 41st birthday, the family gathered for dinner at Charity and James's home. All the family had an Easter egg hunt and prepared dinner. And just a side note, they'd been at church all day with Alma's family. That's Leonard Sr.'s, or Leonard Jr.'s wife.
Yeah.
His family.
His ex-girlfriend.
Right.
One of his only people that ever dated him.
So they had been with that family for the better part of the day and had like a proper Easter dinner and stuff. So it was said that Charity was either making Sloppy Joe's or Hamburger Helper.
Nice.
Right? So.
Some form of burger.
Right? So anyway.
Some form of the boof.
It just so happens that it wasn't like a formal dinner and there wasn't. It was more of a chill night.
Yeah, it was more of a relaxed evening, not a formal Sunday Easter.
Right. They had an Easter egg hunt and then they just hung out and made dinner and enjoyed the afternoon. James didn't participate in any of this. He just spent that afternoon in his room. When he came down to eat, his brother asked him something about his car. And this, according to James, is what pushed him over the edge. Because like I said before, he thought his brother was always tampering with his car and stuff like that. So him making a comment about like...
So he thought his brother was giving him shit, like egging him on about his car.
Yeah. Or like, hey, how about your brakes or what? Like, I don't know what he asked him specifically, but he said that he asked him a question about his car and it just was his tipping point.
Sent him spiraling.
Yeah. So he went back to his room to retrieve a .357 Magnum, twin .22 caliber handguns, and an 18 shot rifle.
Nice.
He first shot his brother, who was in the kitchen, was back to the sink, his wife, Alma, and then his mother. And his mother tried to stop him because she was shot in the chest. So, like, she lunged towards him to stop him, to, like, save her family.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And then three of the children, 16-year-old Michael, 15-year-old Thomas, Carol, who was 13 years old. Then he went to the living room, and Leonard III, his 17-year-old nephew, tried to stop him, but he couldn't. And then he killed the other four children, Anne 12, David 11, Teresa 9, and John 4. So he killed 11 people, and 8 of them were children.
Alma and Leonard Jr. have a lot of kids.
Yeah, they do have a lot of kids.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, so 11 people he killed, but 8 of them were kids.
Jeez.
Yeah. So he's super fucked up.
Yeah, that is super duper fucked up.
And after they were all dead, he went around and shot each one of them one more time in the head to make sure that they were all dead. He fired
overkill much.
He fired a total of 35 shots. Well, and I don't think I put this in the story later, but it's just kind of another side note, if you will, that there was no, and I did say this a little bit, so I guess I'll just wait until I get there and see if I actually put this in there. But
all right.
Sorry. 3 hours after the shooting at 9:30 p.m., he called the police and calmly said, "There's been a shooting here." When the police arrived, James was standing inside the front door of the house. 5 bodies were in the living room, 6 in the kitchen, all shot in the head except his mother, who was shot in the chest. And again, she had lunged forward at James, trying to like stop him to save her family. None of the victims were restrained or tied up in any way. The only sign of a struggle was an overturned trash can.
Jeez.
So what I was gonna say, and I so obviously didn't put it in my notes, but he shot them all, but maybe not killed them, but like incapacitated them.
And then he went around and shot them all in the head to make sure
they were dead. Yeah.
Okay.
Because how do you kill 11 people with nobody being able to get out?
Right.
And it was also said that one of the girls, and I would assume that it was probably Carol because she was the one that was in the kitchen, tried to make it towards the back door to get out.
Aww.
So she was the only one that was close to any like kind of exit in the house.
That's so sad.
It's so sad. He was taken into custody and arrested and charged with 11 counts of aggravated murder. He refused to answer any questions by the police and was totally uncooperative. And he made it clear that he would plead insanity.
It sounds like it, though, honestly. Like, he's insane.
Yeah, but, you know.
I mean, I don't think it's right. I think he should probably be, like, done unto him what he does unto others. But by the same token, sounds like he's pretty fucking crazy and far gone.
Yeah, but there's also some premeditation involved because he was asking about silencers and he was having target practice.
Right, that's why I said, did people's alarm bells not go off?
No. And he told the bartender that he needed to take care of the problem, and that was the day before.
Yeah.
So maybe right. He didn't intend on doing it on Easter Sunday, but like
but
that
he
was
the intention of doing it at some point.
Right.
And maybe not even unto his brother, but just on to his mom.
Right. Who knows? But it was like he said for himself that it was his tipping point. So as an adult, James stood 5'6" and 135 pounds. So he's a pretty small guy. People described him as shy, modest, and bookish. And he was a helpful man. Like, he was willing to help any of the neighbors or do things that people asked him to do. Like, he wasn't like some douchey guy that you like basically no one saw this coming. So he was quiet. He had no run-ins with the police prior to this incident. And people who knew him said that they never believed that they would never believe that he would be capable of something like this.
Jeez.
It's always the quiet ones, right?
It is always the quiet. Well, not always, but yeah.
Not always.
A lot of the time, yes, it's the quiet ones.
It can be. It can be the quiet ones.
It can be the quiet ones.
Or it can be the noisy ones.
Or the very suspecting ones. Like, I don't know, somebody buying a silencer and says that they have a problem they need to take care of?
Yeah.
Alarm bells.
Alarm bells.
Get them installed.
Hamilton, Ohio, where they lived, is a semi-small community with about 63,000 people. So it's not a big booming metropolis, but it's not tiny either. So it was rocked by the murders. They were a huge story, and it turned the town into a, quote, three-ring circus. Sales of the local daily newspaper doubled. People were in total disbelief and denial that James could have ever been responsible for the murders of his own family. Friends and relatives couldn't believe it. James's uncle, Rufus Skinner, insisted that, quote, Jimmy and his brother Leonard were as close as two soldiers who did everything for their mother ever since his father died in 1947, end quote. Arthur Bauer said of his close friend James, quote, he's not violent at all. I can't believe he did it. How could anything like that happen, end quote.
So, yeah, he was totally just flying under the radar in right. his depression and delusions and unhappiness.
But I don't understand where the uncle thinks that they were like, the, him thickest and the brother thieves. Were close. Yeah, thickest thieves, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't sound like they were. It sounded like his brother kind of gave him hell and was responsible also for the way he turned out.
A local woman and a close family friend and neighbor, Mrs. Lucille Tabler, a retired court stenographer, couldn't believe that, quote, Jimmy could be responsible for the murders of his own family. She told reporters, quote, I just don't believe it. Why would he want to do something like that? I wish I could just talk to Jimmy, end quote.
Jeez.
Yeah. So after learning of his confession, his presence at the murder scene, his fingerprints being the only ones on the weapon that belonged to the weapons that belonged to him and were used to kill his family, and blood on his clothing, she still refused to believe that he could be capable of something so terrible. So I guess sometimes the brain just doesn't, if it can't make sense of any of something, it just doesn't want it to be true.
It just doesn't process it, yeah.
Right. That's what it kind of sounds like for that woman in particular. And as more information surfaced about the murders...
Shit, sorry.
It's okay. Daphne's tearing down the house.
I know, I'm sorry. I just like totally had a leg spasm.
Didn't even mean to. Breaking the chair.
All right, you're good. Sorry.
It's okay. So after more information about the murder surfaced, people began to hate James and were looking for someone to take out their rage on, because he's in jail, so they can't take it out on him. 11 people killed, 8 innocent children, a whole family gunned down, right? And so you want to be pissed at this point, right? First, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe he did it. Now you're like, this motherfucker
did this.
Right. And so there was one Rupert in the phone book, a Donald Rupert, who was in no way related to the family. And he had to temporarily change his name because of the harassment he endured simply by having the Rupert name. Like, he got obscene phone calls. He got harassed. His family got harassed.
Jeez.
Right. So it's all fucked up.
That is fucked up. Well, like, what if Alma didn't die? What if she made it through it? And then what? They're just going to be pissed at Alma? Like, if she had left, yeah, if she had left, if she, like, had to go run to the store for something real quick, they're just gonna be like, you lived and you related. Fuck you.
Maybe not to her, because she would have been a victim, but yeah, people are weird, right?
Yeah. They makes just, no sense to me.
I think they just assumed that he was related, even though he wasn't.
Well, it also, yeah, there's just so many things like that that don't make any sense to me, like when people come after, like, parents of, you know, it's like, sure, they played a hand in some way, but they didn't, like, give this child the gun and say, go kill these people.
Right.
You know, like Ted Bundy's mom.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, like, guilt by it. Just having the same name or whatever.
Guilty by association.
Yeah, he's not even associated, though. I was going to say guilt by association, but he's not even related. And even if he is related, even if he's his fucking cousin or uncle.
These people need to get alive.
He didn't
redirect their anger in a positive way.
Right. He didn't have anything to do with it. So you got to feel sorry for Donald Rupert and his family.
Either a positive way or a productive way. Like, I don't know, maybe go clean up some trash on the side of the road with your anger. Go take it to the jail. Go bring it to him. Go bring him all the trash.
Exactly. Something.
Yeah.
In June of 1975, the trial began. The defense would enter a plea of not guilty by reason of temporary insanity. Do you like how this justice is super swift?
Yeah.
Like, it happened in March and the trial's already in June.
Right.
I love it.
It happened in April, April 30th.
March 30th.
I thought you said it was April 30th.
March 30th.
Oh, okay.
Easter Sunday, March 30th, 1975, the day after James's birthday on March 29th.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, his defense attorney, H.J. Bressler, argued that...
Well, I guess that just goes to show you how much crime is in that town, how much crime is in that area. They're like, oh, we could get him going immediately. We've seen the jury.
Right.
We're ready for this immediately.
Yep, let's go. Let's get him. Let's
we
get
don't
this
even
moving.
Need to collect evidence.
So his defense attorney argued that the very act that Rupert had committed itself was insane, quote, insane. And he said that Rupert had been insane for at least 10 years and he was incapable of controlling his actions. Several witnesses agreed. Dr. Howard, and these are, you know, paid witnesses, of course.
Of course.
Yeah. So Dr. Howard Sukolov described Rupert as suffering from a paranoid psychotic state, a symptom of which is a departure from reality in terms of thinking and behavior. Rupert, he suggested, was inclined to be excessively suspicious, jealous, and angry. Defense psychiatrists also testified that Rupert was absolutely obsessed with the belief that his family members, the police, and the FBI were all involved in a longstanding conspiracy to persecute him. Dr. Philip Mihanik saw an even wider deficiency in Rupert's personality. Quote said, his ability to evaluate is impaired, his view of others is warped, and he sees virtually no one in a kindly light, end quote. Harvard psychiatrist Dr.
That sounds like a personal problem, if you ask me. Like, if you can't figure out how to be happy and get out of your delusions, like...
Yeah, but if you're delusional, problems. You can't do it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like even delusional people have somewhat kind of a grip of reality. Like, okay, this is what I look like in the mirror.
Well, no, because that's why they're delusional. They don't have a grip. Whatever that sound was.
Like, they could look in the mirror and be like, okay, this is actually what I look like. I'm not like me. I'm 4'11 in brunette. I don't look in the mirror, or I don't like hope to look in the mirror and be like, oh, I'm 6'2 and blonde. You know?
But you're not delusional.
No, but that's... Okay, anyway, I guess, yeah. See, that's what I'm saying.
You just made the point that yeah. You're not delusional, so therefore you see reality. Yeah. Someone who's delusional does not see reality.
Okay, got it.
Point?
I could be 6'2 and blonde in somebody's eyes.
Right. Harvard psychiatrist Dr. Lester Grinspoon testified that Rupert's deadly reaction may have been uncontrollable. Quote, his ego was just completely overwhelmed by his rage. This suppressed rage, which had been accumulating for over some 10 years or more, actually since childhood, that there was no way in which he could avoid doing the act. In fact, if there were more people in the house, they might have been killed also.
Gee. Well, yeah, I would end say quote. So. If there was anybody else in the house, they definitely would have been killed.
Yeah.
I don't think he was stopping at 11 since he fired 35 rounds.
Right. Yeah.
And that was just to make sure they were all dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The prosecution was led by the prosecutor, John Holcomb. He was the county prosecutor. He himself had visited the crime scene and stated that there was so much blood on the floor, it had seeped into the basement support beams, which are still stained with blood to this day.
Oh, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that fact or faux?
That is fact.
Okay.
That is fact.
Because, you know, you hear those things and it's like, oh, fuck. And then, like, morbid-minded people go check it out and they're like, where's the blood?
Well, the house is still standing.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's sad. But it's haunted as fuck.
Probably.
I don't know. I just feel like some places like that, they should just tear them down.
Yeah, a lot of them they do. This one they didn't.
I know.
But it's a little town, so maybe they need the house. I don't know.
Prosecutor can't afford to rebuild.
Right. Prosecutor Holcomb would portray a much different picture of James Rupert, presenting 29 witnesses and 200 pieces of evidence. The prosecution would argue James Rupert was a cold, calculated murderer who was 100% aware of what he did, and his motivation was money. The temporary insanity plea was all part of his plan. He would claim temporary insanity in the hopes that he would be committed to Lima, the state's mental institution, and be in there for just a couple years and then, quote, be cured and walk out with $300,000, which is collectively what his mom and his brother were worth, like all their assets, life insurance, their homes.
I feel like he wasn't really in it for money, though. I feel like he was in it to get away from his family.
But he was also broke. This is just what the prosecution's saying.
No, I'm saying my take on
personal
it.
Opinion.
Is that I feel like he wasn't really after complete, like he wasn't just killing them for money. He was killing them for, like, his own freedom.
For revenge.
For freedom.
Yeah, and revenge, because they treated him like shit.
Yeah.
But there was no reason to kill the rest of them, except for that they were there and he was just in a fit of rage.
Well, maybe the kids made fun of him, too.
I don't know. But anyway, so that's the state's take on it, and that in the state of Ohio, if you're found not guilty by reason of temporary insanity, you can still inherit your family's estate, and he was the sole heir. And if he was found guilty of murder, then he wouldn't be entitled to any of the money. So the prosecution was thinking that was his scheme. Because remember when he got arrested, he wouldn't cooperate with police, and he said right away, I'm going to plead insanity.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I just feel like he's not coming off as the super money hungry type.
Yeah, but he didn't have any money. I don't know.
That doesn't mean he's money hungry.
Well, and there's no real background on that other than the fact that what his family was worth and that, which isn't a ton of money, but it's better than no money. And that, you know, it was assets, life insurance, the whole shebang.
Right.
You know, so the prosecution's psychiatrists and psychologists didn't believe that Rupert had acted impulsively. They thought that it was thought out and a thought out and planned murder. Dr. Charles Fuss. Dr. Charles Jr. told the court that he did not believe the slayings were carried out in a robot-like manner, like the defense had said, that he was like just acting in this delusional state. Yet there was simply no explanation for him killing his sister-in-law and the children. They had never been accused by Rupert as being part of the alleged conspiracy against him, where the FBI and his mother and brother and local police and all these people are trying to say that he's gay and a communist and all this. So he had never, like, they were never in his conspiracy theory.
Okay.
Alma and the kids, right?
Right.
They were just there. Wrong place, wrong time.
Okay.
So the Butler County coroner, Dr. Garrett Boone, called the Rupert slayings an act of deliberate execution.
Yeah. I mean,
Because they were all...
I definitely think he did it deliberately. I just don't know if he did it for money.
Well, and they were all just executed. Like, he shot them, so they couldn't move, and then he went back and do in the head, you know?
Right. That's why I said overkill when you said that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. On July 3rd, he was found guilty on all 11 counts of murder by a 3-panel judge. After the ruling, a mistrial was declared because it was unclear if the verdict by the 3 judges had to be unanimous or if it was a majority rule verdict. I feel like they should have figured that out before they fucking went to court.
Yeah, I think they should have too.
But they were in such a hurry to get him there because they didn't have anything else going on.
Yeah, they're like, nothing else is happening in this town right now. Maybe there's a 1 speeding ticket, but...
Right. And then they're like, after the fact, they're like, oh, fuck, we didn't read the rules.
Shit. Mistrial.
Mistrial.
Which, so, in that time, they can get out, can't they, if there's a mistrial?
I think he was still being held. I don't think he ever got out. Okay. I mean, I don't think he was released during that period of time.
Gotcha.
Okay. So his second trial began on July 23rd.
Jeez. They're like, mistrial on July 3rd. And then 20 days, they're like, okay, we're ready to roll again. Bring us back all the exact same evidence we just had last month.
Right.
Let's hear it all
again. We're back from our 4th of July summer vacation. Let's roll.
Yeah, let's hear it all again.
The second trial was held in Findlay, Ohio, which is 125 miles north of Hamilton, because it was determined that James wouldn't be able to get a fair trial in Hamilton, which is fair, but I feel like 125 miles away.
I was gonna say, I feel like that's not going to make any difference.
Right? It's like, 1975, too. It's not like it's 1875.
Right.
You know, where nobody's going to get the information.
Yeah.
So the defense and the prosecution presented their arguments again, and Rupert was found guilty by another 3-panel judge and sentenced to 11 consecutive life sentences.
Was this majority rules or was it unanimous? No,
apparently these guys had it hashed out before they went to deliberate.
Okay, got it.
These guys are like, okay, we're not going to do that again. Although they were different guys, but they're like...
they're like, we can't repeat the mistakes of the other fools.
Right.
We have more happening here.
Let's read the rules before we start.
Yeah, we have more happening here than they do in Hamilton. Right. We had 2 speeding tickets this month.
He was sentenced to 11 consecutive life sentences. The death penalty was not an option because capital punishment had been suspended in Ohio from 1972 to 1976 as a result of a ruling by the Supreme Court for obviously an unrelated case, since that was ruled on before the Rupert family murders. But it worked out for James
that he didn't get the death penalty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because he most certainly would have.
Yeah, I'm sure he would have. Well, good. I'm glad he got 11 life sentences, because if he would have gotten 9, that would have been like, the fuck? What about the other 2 people's justice?
Right. On appeal, a new trial was granted in 1982. His new defense attorney, Hugh D. Halbrook, convinced that Rupert was insane, funded examinations of psychiatrists, psychologists from across the country to testify on Rupert's behalf. So he funded him. He paid for him himself. Because he was that convinced that his client was insane.
Jeez.
So prosecutors still had the same.
So he was smart enough to hire the right lawyer. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Exactly. So prosecutors still had the same evidence, money troubles, disdain for his mother and brother. And Alma, remember how she was his ex-girlfriend? And then she married his brother, who was successful, the golden boy, right? So also asking about the silencer while purchasing ammo and the target practice the day before the murder and so on. All the evidence that they had against him. They just were like, hey, don't forget.
We still have all this on the books.
Right? These are the things. So on July 23rd, 1982, again, a three-panel judge issued their ruling. He was found guilty of 2 counts of murder in the first degree for killing his mother and brother, but found him not guilty on 9 counts of murder by reason of insanity for the shooting deaths of Alma, Leonard Rupert III, who was 17, his nephew, Michael Rupert, who was 16, Thomas Rupert, who was 15, Carol Rupert, who was 13, Anne Rupert, who was 12, David Rupert, who was 11, Teresa Rupert, who was 9, and John Rupert, who was 4.
That's so sad.
So sad. So he received 1 life sentence for each count to be conserved consecutively.
Well, he got life anyway for the 2 he was found guilty of.
Yes.
Well, so that's
but they were consecutive, not concurrent. So that's good.
What's the difference?
That, like, basically after you die, you still are in prison because it's consecutive. Like, not concurrent. But it doesn't make a difference.
It doesn't happen at the same time.
Right. It doesn't happen at the same time. It happens one after the other, after the other, after the other, after
11. What difference does it make if he's dead anyway?
It doesn't.
If he's never getting out.
It doesn't. But it pretty much ensures that they'll never get out because they can't do that. Well, he served 25 years. And so now he's good because they're like, nope, he still have 10 more life sentences.
Okay, I guess that
you
makes
know,
sense.
So yeah. It's kind of for that reason. On July 30th, 1982, Rupert at this time is 48 years old. He became inmate number A16932, assigned by the Ohio Department of Correction and Rehabilitation. At age 61, in June of 1995, Rupert went before the parole board. His release was denied.
Good.
In 2005, at age 71, he was again denied parole at his next parole hearing. In April of 2015, at 81 years old, he went before the parole board again, and the Allen Oakwood Correctional Institutional Parole Board released this statement. Quote, the board has determined that the inmate is not suitable for release at this time. The inmate has not completed any of the recommended programming and does not appear to be willing to do so. The inmate's records notes negative institutional conduct. The inmate took the lives of multiple victims. There have been strong community objections to his release, and the release of this inmate would not be in the best interest of justice. End quote.
Good. I feel like that's fair. I have a question for you.
Yes.
Since he was found not guilty then on the appeal of everything.
Only on 9.
On the 9, right, he was found not guilty, but one of those people was Alma.
Mm-hmm.
What, did he get any of that money since he was found not guilty by reason of insanity?
No, because he was still found guilty of murder of his mother and brother.
Okay, well, I don't know if what was, like, her assets, if he would have been the heir of them.
No. Well, he might have been. I don't know, but he didn't get anything.
Okay.
Because he was still found guilty of murder of the 2 main people who would have been the ones providing the assets.
Right, his own
him.
Family.
Right.
She also had a family.
Yes, she did have a family because remember they were with her family.
On Easter morning.
On Easter morning. So Rupert's next parole hearing was set for April of 2025, at which time he would have been 91 years old. But Rupert died of natural causes at the age of 88 on June 4th, 2022, while still incarcerated. No RIP for you, buddy.
That's so weird that your friend's sister got this, and it was during his life, I'm sure.
Yeah, probably, because he just died last June.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Like so
a year ago.
Side note, about a year after the murders, the house was opened up to the public, and all of its contents were auctioned off. And of course, people's morbid curiosity, they were lined up around the block to get into the house. It was then cleaned, recarpeted, and rented to a family that was new to the area, whose members were unaware that any murders had taken place there. The family later left the house claiming that they were hearing voices and other unexplained noises. Other families have moved in and out of the house, and the house is still occupied to this day.
Weird.
Yep.
Do the people Does everybody else report hearing stuff? Or is it just the one that was immediately after?
I didn't delve into that, but there was a bunch of, like, while I was researching it, I could see that there were a bunch of, like, trailing off in different directions of, like, I live in a haunted house. So I'm assuming that people hear shit and claim shit. But I was just focusing on the case and didn't want to, like, go down a rabbit hole. But...
Okay.
Yeah.
So I wonder if maybe... your friend, the picture that she had of the house, it was of the house, I assume, yeah? Mm-hmm. That house.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it was auctioned off from that house.
I wonder.
And maybe made it into Goodwill somehow or another after all these years.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it was acquired. I mean, I know how it was acquired, but I don't know where.
She lives in Illinois?
She does live in Illinois.
Yeah, it's not far.
Not far from Ohio.
Nope.
Nope. So anyway,
weird.
Yeah, what'd you think?
That's twisted as fuck. I don't know. I sit here and I'm like not trying to subscribe to one way of thinking over the other in this case, because I definitely think he was delusional as fuck, but I definitely don't think he killed them for money. I think he probably just snapped, not with money on his brain. I mean, yeah, and we know he needed money, right? Because he was broke and his mom said you got to start paying rent if you could buy 7 beers a week. Or go out 7 times a week for beers. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
7 days a week for beer. But I feel like he wasn't like, he didn't murder for money. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Okay.
And I don't know. I mean, like, I don't think I have an opinion on that one way or the other, because I feel like he was just kind of like a fucked up kid and then a fucked up adult. And he was just between a rock and a hard place and he was over it. And he just
snapped.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think he was insane. I think he just fucking lost his shit, went upstairs and got his guns and killed everyone.
Yeah, I definitely could understand why he'd have all the guns with all of his delusions happening.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the silencers were related to the delusions, not premeditation.
Well, he didn't end up getting them. He just inquired about them. He didn't have silencers. But none of the neighbors heard any shots or anything.
Okay, so that led me to believe that there were silencers on it, not that Mm-mm. he didn't actually have them.
No, he just inquired about them while he was purchasing ammo.
Okay, got it.
But since he didn't have a job or any money, he probably didn't have the money to buy the silencers.
That's probably fair.
Right?
But no, I just feel like he just snapped.
Well, and people said of his mom that she was the sweetest woman ever and that she was and that they were a good family and that they just would have never seen this coming. And so I don't know if we believe him saying that she did all the shitty stuff to him while he was growing up, or if she turned over a new leaf when she got older, or if she's one way out in public and a different way at home.
Behind
closed doors. Exactly. So I think there are a lot of like... unknowns.
Yeah, I would definitely say there's tons of unknowns in this case.
Well, and especially if you consider the fact that he's like so paranoid that he thinks the FBI is tapping his phones. And...
Right. Well, that's why my immediate thing was so schizophrenic, because schizophrenic people like hear these voices and think these things are happening and that like it's like further than a delusion. Like this is their real life.
Yeah.
Right.
I
think that he might have been half that far thinking that like he is safe, he's not safe anywhere from the FBI, which the FBI shouldn't have cared about you until this point. But unless he's doing something real bad and never got caught for it.
Yeah, never had any trouble with the law before and was by all accounts a good neighbor and, you know, willing to help people out. Although he did make an obscene phone call and stress a lady out at the library. So that's not cool.
That is not cool. That's a place for silence.
Exactly.
Studying.
And nobody wants an obscene phone call.
No, nobody does. I can't disagree with that. But yeah, I really liked it. That was really interesting. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of it either.
I'm just shocked that the house is still up.
It was fun to research it. Just because I'd never, because a lot of the ones we do, we already know about. That's why we're like, oh, I want to do this one. And then when you do them, then you find out way more stuff than you thought you knew, you know, and you're like, Oh shit, I never knew that before. But this one, I didn't know anything about other than what Peg's sister had told me. And
I feel like the ones that we've done aren't very well-known ones for the most part.
I think we're trying to be a little bit more obscure.
Yeah, trying to do things that people have never heard of, right? That aren't very talked about.
Trying to be new and fresh.
Wa-da-da. I don't know what that sound was.
Okay,
it was a new and fresh sound.
Right.
Just like the sound our Instagram page makes every time you look at it. And that is...
at That's Disturbing Podcast.
Woo! She did it!
Yeah, we're not gonna, I pointed at her. Don't ask me for any more.
I pointed at her and she winced. And you can send us a case request form of cases you think we've never heard of to our on our case request page, our case request form page on our website, thatsdisturbingpodcast.com. Or you can shoot us a DM of them on Instagram or to our Gmail account, thatsdisturbingpodcast@gmail.com. But send us some shit that maybe is like local to you that we've never heard of.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Because I would have never known anything about this except for that conversation.
Right. I mean, there's still big ones that I want to cover.
For sure.
But I like the fact that we can react. And I'm sure people, like we said for the last one, never heard anybody talk about Samuel Little.
Nope.
There was like literally, I think with our podcast going up, there was 8
Wow.
on Apple.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. Well, obscurity is, I don't know, maybe more intriguing or interesting.
Yeah. Hearing stuff you've never heard before.
Mm-hmm. No repeats.
Yeah.
Although we're going to repeat.
Yeah.
Because it's inevitable that we want to do some big ones.
But we're new and fresh.
Yeah. Yeah. We do the Gail and Daphne way.
Yeah, we do. We probably shouldn't laugh through some of it, but here we are. We're like, this is how we make ourselves feel comfortable talking about bad things. Ha ha ha.
That's right. All right, Daph, thanks.
Thank you, Mom. Have a good night. Bye-bye. Oh, you know what? By the time this gets posted, Dad will probably be listening to this around his birthday. So happy birthday, Dad.